before Jeffrey speaks to us this morning, I'm going to read from Hebrews and chapter 11. The topic this morning is the assurance of all, the assurance of things hoped for, or the substance of things hoped for, which comes in this reading, and we'll just read the first 10 verses. Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. For by it the people of old received their commendation. By faith we understand that the universe was created by the word of God, so that what is seen was not made out of things that are visible. By faith, Abel offered to God a more acceptable sacrifice than Cain, through which he was commended as righteous, God commending him by accepting his gifts. And through his faith, though he died, he still speaks. By faith, Enoch was taken up so that he should not see death, and he was not found because God had taken him. Now before he was taken, he was commended as having pleased God. And without faith it is impossible to please him, for whoever would draw near to God must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who seek him. By faith Noah, being warned by God concerning events as yet unseen, in reverent fear constructed an ark for the saving of his household. And by this he condemned the world and became an heir of the righteousness that comes by faith. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith, he went to live in the land of promise as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to a city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. By faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive, even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who had promised.
Keep the Bible open.
At that point, where we've just been reading, we're going to look at the theme that faith is the assurance of things hoped for and the conviction or evidence of things not seen. Just let's say, repeat what we have understood by faith. We've understood by faith that God has taken us into union with himself. He is the one who directs our lives, because they are one with him. And so when Jesus says to the man with the withered arm, stretch forth your arm, he has no power to stretch forth his arm, but he's been told to stretch forth his arm, and so he stretches forth his arm by faith. What we're going to look at tonight is a quick sketch of our own faith. We know him. Incidentally, let me say, God does not ask us to stretch forth our arm unless we need to stretch forth our arm. We don't have, faith is not conjuring up all kinds of amazing things and trying to get them to pass by saying them or attempting to do them. It is what he says to us. And you can say there are two things which he says to us. The first one is the natural of the universe he's created, and the second one is what you might call the supernatural, things which are not in the norm of life. And so it's in that area that our faith sees what we would not otherwise see. We just know the nature of God. And as we've said it time and again, we know nothing of God, or for that matter, we know nothing of what God does in that supernatural area unless he speaks to us in regard to that. And that takes away a lot of the strain and pain of trying to pretend that you believe certain things when normally your life goes along natural lines that are indicated by God. So we know nothing, as I said the other night, to a certain sense, we know and can inquire into and can to understand things which are part of this world that God has created. And then secondly, we come to see that those extraordinary things that God has planned in history for us are then known and lived in. And so faith is the assurance of things hoped for. When we know God, then we have hope. Does that all make sense? Let it make sense as quickly as possible. If we can see what God is about in history, what he has planned before time that we should know, and what is planned to happen in time, that's in which we live, then there's no question that faith is the assurance of things hoped for. Everyone in this world lives in a certain kind of hope. Now, there's a great Aussie hope, you know, in lotteries, for instance, and whether we might make it in the next test or something like that. That's a sort of a wishful thinking, and it may be altogether quite out of its reality. But we all hope every day. We make the substance of our hope. We think about things that we would like to happen and assure ourselves they will happen. But when we know God by faith, then we know what he's about, and so we know that faith is the reality or the assurance, the substance of things to come. So I hope we've got that as a basic understanding. And it's also the conviction of things not seen. Last time I touched on one point, and that is how did the early inhabitants, the ones God had created in his own image, how did they know so much when we're not told all the things that they knew? And we are given examples that when with Cain and I'm with Abel, rather, and Enoch and others. But what was it that gripped men in the nature, in the matter of God? And it was this, that he was God. Very simple, isn't it? So we came to understand what it is, who it is, that God enlightens us concerning that. Now, the first things that we know are from the Scriptures, and the last things we know are from the Scriptures. And so God, when we relate to God by faith, we know all we need to know in knowing God. But things which we might try to deduce are those we don't know, and sometimes we gamble on those scores, or we tell God that wasn't quite the way he should have gone about it, and so on. How did the early ones come to know? If you're made in the image of the eternal God, that must be an incredible thing. We teach in colleges and so on that God has a number of qualities or attributes or properties, such as righteousness and holiness and goodness and love. These are all his qualities. And we try to put those together and then make further deductions with the whole lesson. This is getting a bit boring, by the way. Yeah? See, if you are made in the image of your father or mother or whatever you like, in the image of both of them, you must know them as they are, and therefore you must act towards them in relationship as one member of the family does towards another. But the first thing that God said, let us make man in our own image, and in his image made he him, male and female made him them and called them man. But it was just part of the union of man and God, that man is the very image of God, that makes him know so much about God. And you remember we read already time and again in this school that those who reject God and the nature that the scriptures tell us is his nature, those who are in that position know, as Paul says in Romans chapter 1, that we know all things. It would be impossible for us not to know God. We have to make a conscious decision to refuse the knowledge of God. And Paul tells us the only way you can do that is to reject all the evidence that God is God. And so man is in a state of suppressing the truth. He's not just one who's ignorant of it because he's a human being and not God himself, but he's one to whom God has revealed his own nature. So he knows all the things he need to know, but he has to fight hard not to know them. Otherwise they would completely control him in the most wonderful way that is possible. He said, let's make man in our own image. And then he said to man, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and have dominion over it. Well, I've been telling this story for a long time, and the scriptures have been had it there permanently. And so people say, we're not going to go over that ground again, are you? Well, we saw in a very good study the other day that man knows what is God's will, and he is bound to obey God's will, and he is bound not to disobey God's will. So it lies in that what we call the mandate or the command given by God to be fruitful, whatever that may mean, to be fruitful, to multiply, to fill up the earth, and to have lordship over the earth. Now, you know all of that, don't you? Well, come on, you know all of that. You know what it means, don't you? Not game to commit yourself that you do know, but you should know. That's all you should know. That's all you need to know. Be fruitful. You can talk in many ways of natural creation, and you can talk in very special ways of what human beings are to be and to do when they are in union with God. But because of the rejection of God as he is, that means that no one can know God, because no one will know God. So how then do they come to know all this that we're talking about? You tell me now how it is that we come to know. Oh, come on. Be human. Talk to me. Yes, from the word that God has given. And that's extraordinary. See, we Christians and who believe the scriptures, we're not game to venture out. You cannot know God but by faith. And then you cannot not know God when you're in the realm of faith. That's stunning. But when the test comes in the third chapter of Genesis and man is wrought upon not to disobey God and is warned that in the day you eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you will die. You will die. I'm amazed sometimes when I hear people preaching from the Bible, and they say, in the day you eat thereof, you'll surely die. And then they go on to say, well, that's one incident that happened that changed the attitude of most people in the world. And they don't really play it up or show it up in all its form for the world to be dead. That is to say, the inhabitants of this world to be dead, and to be dead universally. So we've been very much blessed with the studies that we've been given in this school of the deadness of man. That the big question is death or life. That's the question for every person. But so many people think we're obviously alive, aren't we? Now let me give you one little hint. Is Christ the bread of life? Was he the bread of life after man, before man sinned? Was he before man sinned? Was he after man sinned? Was he the bread of life? Is the bread sent down from heaven? So if you're a believer, what do you eat of? That bread. If you're if you're a believer, what is the bread of life, the water of life, and as I said the other night, the tree of life? All of those things all tend to life. They all give life. But if you don't get that life, what do you have? Come on. Yes, you have death. And that's the story. You get up in the morning and greet your neighbor, and he's dead. He wonders what you're all about because you're a Christian. So all of these things go to make life. But man, because man has rejected God and rejected his will, he is dead. Just like that. So all of those wonderful qualities that are his are not available to the man who is dead. The whole world of human creatures and all other creatures and so on, all of that speaks of death. So if you look at man, you may sometimes catch a good glimpse of his nature as being a dead creature. You may sometimes catch a bit of a glimpse of what was intended to be wonderful, but which is now puerile, filthy, unclean. Did you know that every human being from that day only knows death? And it's not just knowing about death, but knowing that it's homicide. Every human being is homicidal. That's how we were. And so the world becomes this dreadful world, as we read about in Romans chapter 1. And although there are all sorts of things set up so that we all don't kill each other, yet the desire is there. Talk about anger. Andrew Klein Smith talked about anger, and there's another little book about it, by the way, Angry Heart or Tranquil Mind. But human beings are naturally or unnaturally, by spiritual death, they are on the move all the time to uphold themselves and to kill and to steal and to destroy. When you say things like that today, it is against the mood of today. We actually have governments who legislate against child abuse, who legislate against this and that. And I imagine they think they're doing a great job, but they're doing only what they can do in order to somehow or another make life sensible in some way or another by all these restraints, political correctness, and so on. Man is full of his own ego that he's doing great things. And I'm sure that in a general way, Christianity has had an enormous impact on nations and people. That some of them who hate Christianity are the greatest moralists you can meet. I know all of this may sound very dull to you, and you want to talk about it and think about it and go over it again and so on. But God has set man up to be fruitful, to multiply, fill up the earth. I used to think it was fill it up with bodies. I didn't think necessarily dead bodies, but ultimately dead bodies. But I used to think that to fill up the earth with children was the idea. But the idea is to take what man had in that garden and spread that paradisal life, the life of paradise, and to take it across the ends of the earth. You remember, it was only in one garden that man was, and all the humanity that ever was to be born was there in the loins of Adam and the womb, so to speak, of Eve. And so if you could just spread that throughout the earth, and then if you could have lordship over the earth, the one great lordly creature is man. And his capacities are extraordinary. When I look down and see these things, you know, I think, goodness me. And then I think of my wife, and one of our daughters gave her one of these, what do they call them? Phones. I was hoping I could get to the end without it. But I wouldn't have said anything to my wife because she's such a wonderful woman. And what's more, she'll give it to me later if I say too much. But man is incredible, what he creates with all of that sort of area. A man wants to be all of that from himself, on his own, and better than any other person. That's the world we live in today. And I think we all know what we keep fighting back within ourselves, the nature of God. But you see men it's just me, my did you say Adam? No. Abel. By faith, he knew God. Because you don't know God at all except you have faith in him. And faith in him means that you do his will. Would the next speaker like to let me have his time as well? Because I've only just started and... Yeah. No. All of those men and women that we read about, Sarah and Abraham and Noah and all of these, by faith, they knew God. What is it to know God most of all, concerning what is it to know God by faith? Is it just to believe in God, or the devils believe in God? But they've got the decency to tremble. Many of us know God. You know, yeah, I know God. I know He is. I know He exists. He doesn't exist. He is God. He is Himself. And He has an extraordinary plan. And His extraordinary plan was to, I ask in lots of places, particularly with young people today, why did God create the world? And there's a sort of answer which some give, which they say that it's to glorify Himself, and that's not satisfactory to me. His plan is to make a community of love. I told you when I was speaking the other night that that His plan was to create a universe so that there might be angelic creatures and heavenly creatures, and He created man to be the one who would voluntarily, out of the depths of his being, love God and love his fellow creature. Now, I said the other night there'll be no sin in heaven, and some people looked quite surprised. They thought, you have a wonderful heaven, and you know what I mean, but you've still got to be on the alert all the time. No, not really. Did you know that you'll be eating the bread of heaven in what that place which God is creating? Did you know that you won't be sinning, and you won't have to have dreadful studies like we've been having here, the sin thing all the time? That's not the case. And this community. Now, I'm not going to ask you a question because you could spend hours answering it. But why do you come to a summer school every January? Why do you come? That's the answer I've got from many faces. But I think people just love to be with other people who love. And that's what's going to be forever. And I've talked about this because I've had some rather enlightening experiences in the last 6 months or more. And what I've discovered is that every Christian wants to be a lover of all other Christians. Would that be true? Then now you are now waking up. You are now nodding. You know this bit. And is it in fact a thing that is remarkable that there's a Christian community and that people love each other in that, but they also are ashamed that at times the old homicidal point comes out in some of the best of churches. They are concerned at their own lack of love. Would that be true? Christians are concerned. Do Christians sin and really sin? Yes. Now, the difference between a Christian community and a pagan or secular community is that they will do their damnedest in many very nasty ways, and still somehow they are forgiven. And when they look at what they've done, they think, how could I have done that? How could I have been that, being a Christian? Well, let me ask you another question. Are you dead against the thing you've done that is despicable? And does your personal friend, does he feel that you're the kind of person who shouldn't do those things, and really, left in the proper way, won't do those things? But in his failure, he's loved by his fellow Christian. Oh, come on! Haven't you been ashamed of yourself as a Christian? Haven't you hated the things you do? Let's put it this way, you hate them. But let me put it this way. The community brings the forgiveness and peace of God just where failure is so often seen. Now, in heaven, will we have to be on the alert all the time? Will we have to do some guilt-compensating acts? Or is it true that we are the community of love? That's why we come here. We don't come under condemnation. We don't come under criticism. We come under each other's love, no matter how dreadful the things we have done. Or do you think that when doing dreadful things is dreadful and therefore you shouldn't do them? Say you'll make these compensatory acts. I knew I could have been very close to death in this year, and thought a bit about it. And as I said the other night, I thought I'd just like to slip in up the back, you know, quietly and humbly and meekly, you know. All show attention seeking. What hit me, just hit me, was that nobody would be taken in by that, and they would despise it. But they wouldn't be in that place. That'll never happen, you see. That's what I suddenly... I have very wonderful friends, and I know there are certain people don't altogether like my style. Often I don't. I thought, I've gone to a bunch of people and there's not one tiny criticism in their heart or mind. That's all been finished because they actually know God by faith. They know him by faith. And so what a great time it'll be. No suspicion, no dread of failure. Why? Because every evil creature will be destroyed. The power of those evil things is not present. I can't kind of seem to get it through. But in the midst of all that love, all that worship, and all that filling out the plan of God by doing his will, so that there will be a community of love in which there is no sin. Now, I reckon some of you say, hey, you're kidding us along, aren't you? That would have to be all the more careful. Oh, yeah? Well, let me take you to the cross. Because if we don't get to that, we never get anywhere. And people who say, oh, God wouldn't do that to his son. I've heard cities, the cross was child abuse. He was abusing his own child. But his son wasn't a child in that immature sense. His son knew there would be no liberation for any human creature unless Christ was crucified for him. Unless he took you and me and crucified us in his cross, we judge it if one died for all, then did all die. Do you know that power of the cross is not a creepy thing. It's not a mysterious thing. And somehow or another, if you get very deep into these things of the cross that you'll be wonderfully better off. It is that you were so despicable and so evil and so homicidal that if he didn't take the death of all men, it would be tragedy that God had ever created one. I spent a little bit of time at the end last week of the in Galatians showing that in almost every chapter in Galatians, Paul can't get away from talking about the cross. He gave himself for our sins that he might pluck us up out of this present evil age. I have been crucified with Christ. I've seen a sort of pious adoration when those words are quoted according to one. And what he did on the cross, and it's real. And I've been crucified with him. And then people go into all kinds of contortions to somehow or another show that they are the ones who are striving after and living a holy life because they have been crucified. No, it's because God crucified his Son for every human being on earth. Nobody could stop the tide of evil that springs from the evil one. It's so essential, is it, that we know that we have been crucified with Christ and so we've died to the law, for instance, in the same context. And then I could go on to chapter 3, O foolish Galatians, who has bewitched you before whose eyes Jesus Christ was evidently set forth crucified among you? This is only what I learned of you. Did you receive the Spirit by works of the law, by the hearing of faith? The words that are so powerful. No wonder we have what I called liberal evangelicals who want to get all the wonder of God's doing that through his Son. Because the faith, the God we have faith in, seems somehow in the end to be dependent upon us to grow into that community of love. It's as though the onus is on humanity to do that. But the only human being who ever did it. See, you go back into history. I can't imagine how people could not know. But I can imagine how people will not know about this community of love. I've often said in these days that the community of love is such that God has called it his special people, that he can rely as much on any one of us as he can rely on his Son. We are holy people. It's amazing what we are. We don't see it. So we get all fussed up about things. You know, sin that dwells in me and there's a lot of those things. But God has done something better than that. He has guaranteed the holy community, the community of love. Has that at least come through while we've been talking?
Yes.
Yeah. Sure, we've got to go through the agonies and contortions of trying to get to the place of faith. But if you know God, you know he will never be satisfied until he's brought a new creation into being. A new creation of which you are part. And he's made provision for everything. How can I put it? He is entrusting his creation to his beloved people. It is a law, not just an idea. It is a law that we love because he first loved us. It's a law. You can't go to glory. You can't be amongst the worshippers and powerful holy men and women if the love of Christ in the cross and then through the resurrection and the ascension and the reigning are not what we are about. You know, not in the position to do it, but I'd like to get up and do a holy jig. I ain't none of that sort of jig. That's all right. You can guess. But I can look at masses of it. He will print it. You'll never get it otherwise. But did you realize? Let's just snap in. We won't have a song. I've got to stop a quarter to two, haven't I? But let's. We look for our Saviour who will appear from heaven, that our bodies will be heavenly bodies, just like unto his body of glory, by which he is able to subdue, this is humiliation of body, subdue all things unto himself. You'll have a beautiful body. I don't know how you could do better than you're doing, Laurel, but no, really, I look at it these days and never mind, won't go to that one. Our time taken up. You will be in his image, totally in his image, the image of his son. You'll have everything will be glory. It's not just big lots of water and big lots of heavenly bread, and it is that, but as a symbol, it's unbelievable. Do you forgive your brother when he does something wrong against you? Do you forgive him? Like it's written in the whole show, isn't it? That you forgive him. But when he does it here, do you always forgive him? Now, the strange thing is that we do. We love because he first loved us. Not only we love God, but we love because he first loved us. And the verse that was supposed to be a study verse was, faith is the assurance of things hoped for. Because what you are hoping for, that's your thing. Paul says that love makes us not ashamed because faith makes us not ashamed because the love of God is shed abroad in our hearts. That's the thing, the hope. That is it. And let's believe it. Dear Father, thank you for these scraps that we can share with each other, which when turned over on the other side are wonders of wonders, and that you've always planned that for us, to have a community, that your love may go on for what we call eternity, but just what ought to be, what still surely will be. So Father, increase our faith in your wonder and your being. In Jesus' name. Amen.